When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, let's follow a really rather weird story. And I say it's weird because a man who is at the Glendale Care Center in Toronto, that's for people that need a fair deal of care. Many of them have Alzheimer's or similar illnesses. Here's the story. And family outraged by swastika drawn on uncle's head at Toronto Care facility. And it appears to have been done with a magic marker. When Shane Morrow went to visit his uncle Larry at Glendale Care Center in Toronto's Sunnyside neighborhood this week, he noticed something strange on his head. That's the old man's head. He's partly bald. He's got a big bald spot there. Shane said he and his mother initially thought his uncle had some sort of accident and that the black marks they were seeing were stitches. Well, I see a picture of them. They sure don't look like stitches. But anyway, upon closer look, he realized they were wrong. Someone had drawn a swastika and a happy face on his uncle's head with a magic marker. Shane said he questioned the staff member on duty who allegedly told him that this was one of two swastikas that were drawn on the 65-year-old man's body by a younger man. She then attempted to scrape off the swastika with her fingernails, Shane said. He said he was told that his uncle initially had a swastika drawn on his back, which was able to be washed off, but the one on his head was not. Shane said he began to worry as to how a person could draw on his uncle's body like that. I was thinking, how did he get his shirt off? Why was his shirt off? Did this guy pull his shirt over his head and was abusing him? Shane said he was told by the staff member that the perpetrator of the incident had been arrested and the situation was under control, though apparently that was not the truth at that point. Larry, that's the old man, who is suffering from Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes, has been a resident of Glendale for approximately 2 years, on a waiting list to go into a retirement home. Shane said that aside from the alleged abuse, he noticed his uncle was clad in dirty clothes and living in an unclean environment at the facility. The smell of feces, the smell of urine, I could not believe it, he said. It was to the point where I wanted to grab my uncle, throw him on my back, and take him out of there. While Morrow, who is not Jewish, the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs in Toronto, has reached out to him offering support. CJ also released a statement saying that they are horrified by reports that an elderly man suffering from Alzheimer's, was brutally abused. The statement continues that someone would commit such a vicious act on a human being in our society is almost beyond belief. As usual, the staff can't say anything, the usual Canadian story about it. Well,
I find the whole thing weird. Yeah, I would agree. It's not right to use a magic marker on anybody without their consent. And there seems to be serious evidence of abuse of the older people at this care center. I listened to a radio show about the incident today, and of course there's much storm and rain or thunder and lightning about the swastika. And I mean, I suppose if somebody put a Star of David, it wouldn't have been so bad. The real story here, I think, is the lack of proper care of an older man. Now, presumably he didn't do it to himself. So that being the case, this is a problem, but I would say considerably less than they would make it out to be. Let me see, there's another report here. Now, this is City News, which is run by a Jew, Moses Snymer, for many years. Now, I'm going to actually play it so that you can hear the how we go. We begin to just go completely overboard here. It's a 3 minutes show, three minute news item.
Imagine going to visit a family member who's suffering from dementia in what you believe to be a care facility, only to find that they've been marked with one of the most hateful symbols in modern history.
Now, there's a little bit of editorializing. I think the crime here, or the abuse here, when it's subsequently been arrested for this, but the crime here is the marking the man's body. The swastika is not one of the most hateful symbols of all time. It is to some people. It was actually the symbol of Germany's national revival under a great leader, Adolf Hitler. It is a symbol of peace, very important both to Buddhists and to Hindus. I've been in Japan, I've seen swastikas in many places. So, she's a bit of an airhead reporter. Her name is Christina Hoerun. Well, anyway, she's got to go on about this hateful symbol.
Christina Howard, and that is exactly what happened when Shane Morrow came here to visit his uncle at the home behind me. He found that his uncle's head had been etched with a symbol that is synonymous with evil.
Is the swastika synonymous with evil? No. It was a symbol used by the National Socialists in Germany. Who were in many ways brought about a national revival in their country. But anyway, let's have this is what I mean by fake news. This isn't news. This is editorializing.
Symbol of hate, and it was etched on his uncle's head.
A symbol of hate. The swastika was a symbol of the government of Germany that was bringing about a national revival and succeeded. Not a symbol of hate. This is the pernicious nonsense that passes for news by much of our mass media. But let's proceed.
That marker for at least a few days before Shane got there.
He looked confused and scared, and we couldn't understand why. I raised my eyes and I was like, "You see that on his head?" And my mom said, "What is that?" And I said, take a closer look. Well, it was actually a swastika. And, you know, I was horrified, and, you know, my mom couldn't believe her eyes either.
He says when he pointed it out to staff, they tried to start picking it off and told him that another resident had drawn it, and they reported it to police.
I asked the nurse, who was supposed to be a nurse, you know, how did he get this on his head? And she said that somebody did it to him, and then that this gentleman was arrested.
Call the police when you found the swastika on this gentleman's head.
Did you ask to come in the building? Did you get permission to come in the building?
I'm coming in to visit his uncle.
Well, they're trying to kick the media out.
When we went to the home today, staff there refused to answer our questions. We found Larry Morrow sitting at a table alone, facing a wall, covered in porridge from a breakfast served hours earlier.
It was horrible. I asked my brother, like, what's this? He said he dropped it, and I said, well, why are you still in this? And then he just sat there.
Glendale Care Center is not a licensed long-term care home, but it is a licensed rooming home, something that's not entirely clear from its website. On the website, under its services section, 24-hour supervised care, an on-call nurse, and a house doctor is...
Now, it would seem that there is a story here, and it's wrong that that anybody would be writing on the old man. But, and this, I think, is the more salient point. He is not being properly cared for. The fact that he was covered with porridge, probably stuff he spilled himself, hours after breakfast, suggests that the older people there are not being properly cared for. Now, that is a legitimate story. The swastika, in my opinion, doesn't really matter what was written on his head. It's wrong, of course. But you know, we of course have to have a fair degree of editorializing, and that's one of the problems with our fake news media. Well, the Pope gave a press conference on Thursday in Vatican City. That's his annual New Year's message, and he touched on a number of political items. I won't go on into everything, but he is a far leftist who just doesn't get it right. In the meantime, he has felt like a lonely voice among world leaders, making a case about the responsibility to care for migrants and the urgent dangers of the global warming poses. To care for migrants. Well, it's not Europe's responsibility to care for people who choose to leave their homes in Africa and the Middle East. I would say it's the Middle East problem. In the Middle East and Africa, in Africa's case. In the Middle East, for instance, there have been a lot of people leaving countries like Iraq, some Iran, and other places, Pakistan, Afghanistan. They're almost all Muslims. Well, ding dong, how does that become Europe's problem? Well, it shouldn't be. There are rich Muslim countries, Saudi Arabia among them, the Gulf states as well. Well, why don't they take care of of these so-called refugees? Well, because the West will. Well, at least they will if people like Pope Francis gets his way. What's going on here is a multi-pronged attack. For one thing, hey, it's always easier to fob off your ethnic or religious responsibilities on somebody else if they can find a sucker to take these responsibilities for you, right? That's one thing. Secondly, President Erdogan of Turkey has as much as said what part of the agenda is. He's told the hordes of Muslims who have come to Europe over the past 40 years or so to just keep a low profile and have one more child per family. Basically, their high birth rate will eventually swamp the much lower birth rate of almost all European countries. So they'll basically take over. Not next year, not the year thereafter, maybe not in the next decade. But extend that for half a century, and you will get in many present European countries a Muslim majority. There will be conquest without even having to raise a sword. This is diabolical. Now, I don't think the Pope's a stupid man.
He sees that, but clearly he doesn't care. Well, what else is he going on about? He says, this is a direct quotation, the response to the problems raised by global issues such as climate change remains very weak and a source of grave concern. I'm going to get to that in a moment with another item, but climate change. He's talked about various international conferences, the UN conference recently and one in Madrid, where the leaders get together and they talk, but nothing gets done, according to him. I ask His Holiness, what can they do about climate change? You know, the fact that it appears in some for a decade or so that the Earth is warming up, then it appears it's cooling off. And we've said this many times before, but it's important to know how often the story has changed. In 1970, I remember the big crisis. There's a book that came out on this, The Coming Ice Age. Okay, you got that? Coming Ice Age. Earth is getting colder. It gets so cold, we might all freeze to death. Or, what will we do for food? Okay, that was the big scare. Well, 22 years later, to be absolutely exact, 1992 was the Rio conference, and a group of far leftists, including the man who ran that conference, Canada's then big internationalist, I'm a citizen of the world, Maurice Strong. They had come up with a new problem. No, it's no longer going to be the coming ice age. No. It's global warming. And guess what? It's all our fault. That's right. It's all our fault. I see. Well, how's that? Well, according to them, we burn carbons, gasoline, diesel, coal for hydroelectric generators, and that's putting carbon dioxide in the air, and that leads to global warming, and that's bad. Well, even a high school level of biology would tell you there's not very much carbon dioxide in the air, but it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Unlike carbon monoxide, which can kill you in an enclosed space, carbon dioxide is used by plants, and they convert that into food for themselves, into sugars and starches and so on. It's a good thing. In fact, if you want to improve the growth of your plants, let's say in a greenhouse or in a room, inject a little bit more carbon dioxide. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Okay, a second part of the scare tactics about, it's all our fault. Okay, they say that they said the climate was warming up, and it's our fault. But wait a second. It has warmed up on numerous occasions in the history of the Earth. I won't go back in, hundreds of thousands of years. Well, let's just take the last 1,200 or so. We know sometime late in the Middle Ages, in the Middle Ages, somewhere around 800 or so, Europe warmed up. The Earth warmed up a little bit. It allowed, for instance, the Vikings to hip-hop across the North Atlantic to the Faroe Islands, to Iceland, to Greenland, which at one point did have some greenery on it, to North America. Okay, now the Earth warmed up, according to the thesis of the global warming fanatics. That must be because of man. Well, wait a sec. We didn't have jet engines. We weren't burning gasoline and oil in cars. There weren't any cars or airplanes or railways. So how did this global warming come about? If man didn't do it, well, then the Earth cooled off. We know that because we've got paintings of people skating on the Thames during Shakespeare's time. So there was a cooling period. And then it warmed up again a little bit. It's done that several times. Again, with virtually no human significant generation of of hydrocarbons. So how's man to blame? I mean, this just holds no, holds absolutely no water. It has zero credibility. Well, then they were caught, some of the scientists in at the Copenhagen conference, I believe 5 or 6 years ago, were caught lying. They were actually fudging the data. Turns out, well, maybe the Earth isn't warming up. Oh, I see, okay. So the Earth is warming up, but it's not warming up. So what's the problem? Well, there is a problem. It's climate change. Well, what's climate change? Well, climate change basically is anything you want it to be. It's very hot in Australia right now, and there are a lot of forest fires. That's climate change. Yeah, but it's often hot in Australia. Well, there's lots of forest burning up. Yeah, because Australia is very dry. It's not climate change. I just saw something on Twitter that was kind of funny. Somebody put up the expected highs and lows in Alberta this weekend. It's going to be very, very cold. The person says, well, all these climate change warriors, I challenge them to turn their furnaces off. Yeah. Well, we said it was global warming. Well, no, actually, it wasn't global warming. Well, is it global cooling? Well, we don't know, but it's climate change. I come back to the Pope. I say this with deliberately. He's an idiot. Or worse, what can man do about climate change? I tell you, nothing. In fact, that should be the Pope's department. What the Pope should be doing is what they used to do traditionally in the Catholic Church, is have a major prayer campaign. We used to call it a novena, a 9-day prayer campaign, asking God for help to, I don't know what, soften the climate change, or because there's nothing else we can do to stop it. The climate will get a little bit colder, get a little bit warmer, get a little bit wetter, a little bit drier. What we can do is adapt as best we can if we see a pattern. That we can do. But we can't stop it. And giving up automobiles or killing all the cows so they don't fart. I mean, we are dealing with nutters of the first order. There's nothing we can do about climate change. We may have to adapt. If, for instance, in an area, we notice that over a period of years, let's say the waters of a lake or the sea are rising, there may have to be some accommodations. I've seen that in my own lifetime at my uncle's lodge up on Georgian Bay when I was growing up. Georgian Bay went through periods of low water for a few years and then higher water. And during the low water, some people had to extend their docks if they had a fairly shallow bay. There could be adaptations we may have to make. And not all climate change is bad. For instance, I read an item a few weeks ago on this show where I talked about what one Canadian businessman said would happen if as predicted, and this is only a prediction, the average temperature were to rise about a degree and a half centigrade. He said, well, considerable areas of the Canadian prairies that are now not good for growing wheat. The season is just too short. With a slight increase in temperature, would become viable. We could grow a lot more wheat. So far from, it's a disaster. Or as Greta Thunberg says, yeah, so what does he say? How dare you? Okay. Actually, a slight rise in temperature would be a good thing. It would also mean that we in Canada would spend less money on heating our homes, on using up the very fossil fuels that we're being told is poisoning the environment. The point being that when people like the Pope, who is either an ignoramus or worse, meddle in politics, the results are often very, very poor. Frankly, on climate change, he doesn't know what he's talking about. That which, of course, doesn't mean that he doesn't offer his opinions. Okay, I said I would do something further on this global warming thing, this climate change. And I'm going to do just that. I'm trying to find an item sent to me by Rosemary. And this is on point, on climate change. I'm going to have to, just if you will indulge me for just a moment, I will find this item, because it was an open letter to to the Prime Minister of Canada, and it's about climate change. Dear Prime Minister, and then it's also addressed to the Minister in charge of the environment or climate change. This letter will tell you the truth, and as you surely know, only the truth can set you free. Canada has a problem. Climate change is killing us. Or more precisely, your view of climate change is killing us. You both have come to a meaningful agreement. Your decision will become Canada's future. The first issue to understand is to understand the words climate change. In the recent public discourse, climate change has come to mean blaming humans for changing the climate by using oil and gas and coal. That creates a major difficulty. Now, and that's what is really meant by climate change. It's your fault. And if it's a little bit drier this year, it's your fault. If it's wetter this year, you know, there were floods in the Ottawa Valley this past spring, and Trudeau would say, it's climate change. You see, there are floods. So if it's drier, it's in Australia, it's our fault. If it's wetter one year, as in the Ottawa Valley, it's our fault. okay, so that's very important. The climate change, as it's used today, means we're responsible. That creates a major difficulty, because it means that any time the uninformed see an aspect of climate that either they haven't seen before or an aspect that is genuinely changed, the underlying assumption is that it must be our own fault and it must be changed for the worse. This view of our climate as primarily anthropomorphic is useful for scaring the populace into submission so you can tax and regulate us to death. But in fact, is the modern-day equivalent to the geocentric view of the universe. And that was that used to be the view of many people, that the Earth was the center of the universe. We now know that's not the case. The sun is the center of our constellation, but it's not even the center of the universe. But okay. And that geocentric view of the world dated back to the Greek astronomer Ptolemy. So let's be clear. There is no doubt that the climate is changing. The climate has always changed and always will. The climate will never stay the same, nor should it. The only thing more absurd than denying climate change is thinking that humans can stop it from changing. This is the point I made earlier. But when people today say the word climate change, they mean something else. They mean that humans are to blame. It is only natural that because we humans tend to incorrectly perceive ourselves as the center of things, that we would blame ourselves when the Earth's climate changes.
This flaw in human thought is not new. The Maya, the Inca, and Aztecs used to do the same thing. In a vain attempt to control the weather and the resulting crop yields, they would engage in human sacrifices, including decapitation, blood offerings, and live heart extractions. You know, if we just please the gods, well, they'll do something about climate change. Well, we do it a little differently these days. We just tax you to death. If those efforts didn't work and the crops failed, then the assumption would be that they didn't do enough of it, leading to more sacrifices. You see, they doubled down on it instead of saying, well, geez, maybe the gods don't have any power. Or maybe the gods weren't interested. Or maybe they didn't like the sacrifice. Maybe this whole thing is wrong. Oh, no. We'll do more of it. Today, it seems obvious to almost all of us that blood offerings don't change the weather. I find it strange, though, that when the sacrificial offerings are from our own treasury, especially if the victims of sacrifice are either corporations or wealthy individuals, you, that's the Prime Minister and the Minister in charge of the environment, and many other Canadians continue to believe essentially the same thing. And what leaders know is that being the master of sacrifice concentrates power in those conducting the ritual. Your government's view that Canada can stop the global climate from changing by taxing Canadians, killing billions of dollars of new projects, and chasing foreign investment away when none of the major global powers are doing the same is profoundly harmful and irresponsible. You've created a graveyard of cancelled mega projects, particularly pipelines, that are severely damaging to Canada, but that strongly benefit other nations for no good reason. For instance, who benefits from Canada not being able to build pipelines? Oh, let me think. Saudi Arabia! Not exactly what I would call a Western-friendly country. Venezuela. So by being unable to get a fair deal of our oil to market, who are we about? Are we benefiting the planet? No, we still will burn oil, only instead of burning our own, we burn hostile foreigners. Gee, we showed them, didn't we? And he goes on. You created a graveyard of canceled mega projects that are severely damaging to Canada, but that strongly benefit other nations for no good reason. The Energy East cancellation resulting from the National Energy Board including a climate change considerations in its evaluation of that project is the latest serious casualty. Insanity. We should be ashamed that we will now unnecessarily import oil from dictatorships when we should be building a stronger Canada and using our own oil. Just 18,000 years ago, almost all Canada sat under giant thick sheets of ice. Both the Cordillerian and Laurentide ice sheets were continuous sheets thousands of kilometers across and several kilometers or miles thick. They melted entirely without human intervention, as did their equivalents in Asia and Europe. They melted so quickly that the rocks upon which they rested, including the Canadian Precambrian Shield, are still rebounding from the rapid removal of their incredible weight. Sea levels have risen over 100 meters, so that's about 110 yards, during the period separating Alaska from Russia. That's all, you know, within the last 20,000 years. Imagine the energy required to melt several continental ice sheets thousands of miles across. And over 100 meters, raising the sea levels by over 100 meters in a few thousand years. A blink of an eye in geological times, just on the edge of recorded human history. Let the fact that humans had nothing to do with that sink in. And then ask yourself how taxing Canadians and issuing government subsidies to install windmills and solar planets will stop that sort of planetary scale climate change. The Earth warmed up, melting the huge ice caps that are significantly melting them. No hydrocarbons, no gasoline being burned, no coal for electrical generators. How the hell that happened? Rather than the disaster that you would have us believe has befallen us or will befall us in the future, what we have in fact observed is that access to abundant and reliable energy has increased human lifespans, reduced famine and suffering, and led to unprecedented levels of prosperity across the globe. And that's true. The gross number of poor people, people below the poverty level, has vastly fallen since the Second World War. Access to secure sources of energy reduces the impact climate to humans, not the other way around. Today, humans are more able to respond to natural disasters than ever before, largely because they have access to abundant energy. For instance, airplanes can deliver emergency aid quickly. That couldn't be done 75 years ago. Life before hydrocarbon energy was available was much harder, and many lives were cut short by starvation and disease. Today, anti-hydrocarbon positions are written with computers made of and powered by hydrocarbons by people who got to work in a vehicle powered by hydrocarbons, who demand access to health care that's only because of hydrocarbon energy, and who go on vacations to warmer climates in planes powered by hydrocarbons. The hypocrisy is telling. No opponent of hydrocarbon energy seems prepared or willing to live without it, including you and your government. It's noteworthy that the two primary products of hydrocarbon combustion are water and carbon dioxide, which, along with the sun and nutrients from the earth, also happen to be the very building blocks of life on earth. What does a plant need to grow? Well, two of the products of combusting hydrocarbons, water, H2O, and carbon dioxide. That is because hydrocarbons are themselves the natural product of organic growth and decay. The primary, indisputable, and measurable impact of increased levels of carbon dioxide on Earth is that plants will grow quicker, which is why greenhouses routinely pump carbon dioxide into their greenhouses to levels 300% higher than the current atmospheric levels. Carbon dioxide, far from being, it's terrible, it's good. And that is done to accelerate plant growth. Carbon dioxide should be celebrated just as water is, not vilified as a pollutant. And that's what our trust fund kid prime minister talks about, carbon pollution. There is pollution, of course. Some gases and poisons pumped into the air or water are pollution, and yes, we should do our best to curb that. But carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. There is no invisible thermometer controlled by taxation and regulation and subsidy that will change the output of the sun or our relationship with the sun. It turns out that the earth and the sun and the universe at large just don't care that much about humans or our actions. The simple fact of the matter is that we are vastly more affected by the planet than the planet is by us. And one day in the distant future, we will simply be another sedentary level of geological record. However, just as Galileo was persecuted during his time for advancing a heliocentric theory, that is, that the planets revolve around the sun, not around the earth, and he was questioning the geocentric view of the universe, those of us who question this anthropocentric view of climate are now also subject to ridicule and persecution. This persecution takes shape in the notion that if I deploy scientific knowledge to refute many of the alarmist claims made by those who believe climate change is anthropogenic or caused by man, then I must be a denier, an epithet closely linked to neo-Nazis. Statements like the science is settled or 97% of scientists agree are extremely troubling, as they appear themselves anti-scientific and designed to suppress the relentless questioning that is essential to the scientific method. Even Neil deGrasse Tyson's statement that the good thing about science is that it's true whether or not you believe it misappropriates the scientific method to declare science as an infallible source of truth rather than as a process of finding and discovering truth through questioning and testing. There's more to this, but I think it certainly gives you the idea. And I think it's important for us to make sure that we tell other people, you know, including sometimes our own misguided friends who may have fallen for this. You know, there's nothing. You know, I don't blame somebody for getting it wrong, but I do think it's important that we try to set our friends respectfully straight. Well, this is Paul Frost. I'm going to take a kind of different musical break tonight. I'm going to play some favorites from Germany. Oh no, those who are not our friends who are listening. No, you're not about to hear German marches from World War II. Well, these are this is good German drinking music. I hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio.
Thank you.
this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side Meet. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf. Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends.